At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the adulterous voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Matthew, indeed. I feel bad, but I have just let you know something which wasn't easy for me to tell you. Got to be honest.
Go on, reveal it to the listeners, please.
I will be going on the Fozcast again. Ugh. And I've been nervous. I've been nervous about telling you because I know that it does feel like I'm straying from GKU. And I just want you to know that it's not about you. It's all me. You know, you haven't done anything wrong. You know, I'm really, really happy with where we're at with Goalkeepers Union. I think we're going in a great direction. And look, it's all me. I just want you to know that.
It's very modern, mate. It's an open relationship. You're taking things to a whole new level.
Indeed. Yeah, no, I'm due to be going on there soon to talk, to do a little transfer roundup of sorts. So I think it's something a little bit different for them, obviously. So we'll be talking about the goings on from the window that has just passed.
All right. So GK's on their way, basically.
Yeah, essentially. but with a much bigger audience.
And a slightly more high profile guest, presenter, as well. Yeah. We should say before we continue here, so not only are you being adulterous, but you are away at the moment. So you're not in England, you're not in Dubai, you are traveling all over the place. And in typical Richard Lee fashion, you forgot to take our precious podcast equipment with you. And therefore, you are doing this over the medium of Zoom. So sound might not be what it normally is with a podcast, but we're going to battle through anyway.
We're going to try our best. You know, this is going to probably insult you and our listeners, but I didn't forget. The truth was, I didn't have space. And the reason being is I'm traveling for a couple of weeks all in, and I don't really like to check any bags in because, especially when you're getting lots of different flights, it's a real pain to keep checking bags in. So I've gone for the smallest bag you can imagine that I've managed to fit 2 weeks worth of clothes in, and I just could not fit my little mini microphone or iPad in there. So, I mean, I'm sure you're going to take offense at that, but that is the truth.
Okay, do you want to give us a quick synopsis of where you've been, where you're going?
So yeah, meeting a couple of different agents in a couple of different countries just to build further connections, meeting a couple of the lads, obviously doing the Fozcast. And I am actually going to, as you know, I've got a goalkeeping tattoo of sorts. In fact, it's a normal tattoo, but I'm going to call it a goalkeeping tattoo purely for the show because there are some goalkeeping elements in there. I am actually going to get that finished and I have that done in Madrid. So that'll be the final leg of my trip. And then I'll be heading back to Dubai.
Lovely stuff. On with the show.
Let's do it.
We shall start at Bramall Lane, where it was Sheffield United 2, Everton 2, and Jordan Pickford, England's number one yet again for the upcoming internationals. No doubt we'll get on to that as well a bit later, the three selections made by Gareth Southgate. But in this game particularly, very unlucky to register an own goal in that first half from Cameron Archer, then earning his side a point with, what are we going to call this, a double, a triple save from Ollie McBurnie?
I'm going to go triple because I think that little flick of the leg, in fact, you could argue the third save, there's a little bit more conscious effort than maybe the second one, because the second one essentially hits him in the head. The first one, it's a slightly unusual looking save in that he's effectively dived all out, but where he's ended up making the save is quite close to him. But goalkeepers listening in will know that that is often the case, that you react and you just explode and go. And that then meant it was a little bit tougher for him to get up for the second one. But credit to him in that he sits up, he's just about aware enough to get something in the way, which ends up being his head. And then the awareness just to flick his foot when the ball's there. Otherwise, it would have been a goal, that third one, had he not have got it out of the way of the striker at that point. But yeah, look, excellent save at that time in the game as well. I mean, how often in a career, and again, you know, I speak to all goalkeepers out there, how often in a career do you have a chance to make a save like that and actually execute it in the way that he did? Brilliant save. Top save as well earlier in the game. Far post, one that he realised he couldn't quite come for. speed of thought to then turn, make himself as big as he could. Good save there, but certainly the save at the end. Just, yeah, fantastic.
Vintage Pickford too, wasn't it? Everything about that moment at the death there with that triple save. Vintage Pickford, especially the facials and the, I don't know, who was he channeling? Was it his, you know, Robert De Niro or something?
It was, I was going to say, there was some Italian type gesture, wasn't there? It was a very Sopranos. That's what I'm going to go for. Very Sopranos it was. So I'm not quite sure what that was all about. But no, look, he looks like he's enjoying it. Even the one that he conceded. I mean, of all, you know, of all places that ball could have gone, when it comes off the post, hits him on the head, you know, your head's round. It can go anywhere. And it absolutely fired back into the center of the goal. Just one of those moments. But no, he seems to be playing with a good energy. He seems to be very confident. And again, I know we spoke about this a lot on the pod, but it does seem to be that for him, that is his best state in terms of maximizing his performance. And yeah, I thought it was excellent in this game.
Your head is round. I tell you what, if you're looking for goalkeeping analysis now, that's where we're at.
All right. Maybe not quite. You know what I mean? It could have gone anywhere, couldn't it? It comes back off the angle of the post to hit him in the head. Even that, had it hit his back, it probably wouldn't have had the power to go into the goal, but it's just hit him right in the noggin and it absolutely fired into the goal. Really, really unlucky.
I thought, actually, from watching the games this weekend, Guglielmo Vicario, quite the character too, you know. I can see a bit of Pickford in him, especially with the celebration he made after that save.
Yeah, and it was quite a passionate celebration as well, which is quite unusual to see. Don't get me wrong, it was an excellent save, like taking a deflection, the athleticism that he's shown to the top hand, you know, the physique that he's got, the spring that he's got. Not a lot of goalkeepers make this save, so it's a top save. But the celebration was huge. You know, really, really enjoyed that moment, which, look, we speak about it a lot on this pod. I really don't mind that. I think I like the fact that I'm seeing more of that with goalkeepers. It's that fine balance, I suppose, because we talk about the goalkeepers are very cool, calm, collected, just take everything as it comes, and, you know, it doesn't seem like anything flusters them. We always talk about the Edisons, Allisons, etc., where they just are really, really cool in how they play. And then we have got this other brand of goalkeeper, and I don't mind it, you know, to actually celebrate the save. We very rarely as goalkeepers get those moments, so when you do, to have a little celebration, I'm fine with it, to be honest.
At the Etihad, it was Man City 5, Fulham 1. And the second City goal, let's just talk about this, because Nathan Ake was the goal scorer because Manuel Akanji was deemed to not be interfering. Discuss.
Mental. Do I need to go any further? No, yeah. Just mental. Like, of course he's, yeah. I mean, look, and again, this is where, and I get it, obviously, they go to VAR, or, you know, people are looking at it from different perspectives. We're naturally looking at it from a goalkeeper's perspective. The moment it goes past the player like that, they are interfering when they're jumping over the ball or trying to get out the ball, because you don't know if they're going to get a touch on it. So are you going to dive all out if you think they're going to get that touch? Now, whether he makes the save or not, and I feel like we've had similar conversations to this before, it was probably a similar outcome from memory. I can't remember the exact moment or moments from previous podcasts, but the point is exactly that while there is somebody that is in the line of sight, or is, you know, in the line the ball is going to go, you can't fully react or fully go until you know the outcome of that situation. So I think with this, had he not have been there, then, of course, it gives the goalkeeper that much more chance to go for the initial ball, and he probably makes a save. That's my opinion. I know some people might disagree with that and think it goes in anyway, but I think he probably makes a save because that slight distraction makes all the difference.
So how are they not seeing that? I mean, how, when they look back at that on the video replay, are they not seeing that Manuel Akanji is right in front of Bernd Leno?
It's crazy to me, because it's like you said, there's two things to, it's not like there's lots to consider here. It's one is he interfering, yes or no? And I think universally we can agree that yes, he is. Secondly, is he in an offside position? And yes, he is. So yeah, for the life of me, I cannot understand how they've come to that decision.
Just to quickly whiz through the rest of the Premier League action, Andre Onana, 30 passes in the first half of Manchester United's defeat to Arsenal. So that is more passes than in all but four of David De Gea in a full 90 minutes for the whole of his United career. It is mad to watch. And I know that Gary Neville constantly refers to it, but I think that is because, like we've said on the podcast before, quite a departure from what we've seen from United for the past, what, 10 to 12 years with De Gea. In goal, Nick Pope slightly questioned for the first of Evan Ferguson's hat-trick in a 3-1 loss for Newcastle at Brighton. Matt Turner, strong hands, strong arms, flexing that wrist back to deny Thiago Silva in a huge win for Nottingham Forest at Chelsea. A good save, that one. And Neto, two moments in the first half in the draw between Brentford and Bournemouth. So a goal conceded as a result of his own foul, and then a big one-on-one save from Kevin Schade.
Yeah, do you know, I've read a lot of the reports since the Newcastle game, and he's getting quite a bit of stick, Nick Pope. And it was, yeah, look, it was a tough moment for him. Obviously, initially with the clearance, he actually makes a brilliant save after that, you know, on the angle, and thought he got down incredibly sharply. Then obviously not being able to hold the one after that. And I do wonder whether so much happening in such a quick space of time, in that, and again, speaking from a goalkeeping perspective, imagine you just sprinted out to the side, you've gone to clear the ball, your clearance wasn't quite right, you've come back into the goal, you made a massive save, you got yourself back into position, shot comes in from distance. I do wonder if that had any impact in the fact that then he wasn't able to hold. It was a difficult one to hold, I must say, but you know, I wonder if that did have any impact. But yeah, it was interesting reading the reports. Again, we talk about it a lot, but it does seem like goalkeepers go from hero to zero and then zero to hero so quickly, you know, so fickle. And obviously compounded with the fact that Newcastle have had a tough start, obviously really tough fixtures in fairness, but a tough start to the season. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But no doubt Nick Pope will bounce back very quickly from that. And then Neto, do you know what? The one where he's given away the free kick and obviously have scored from the goal, I thought he dealt with the first part of this brilliantly. That cross to the back post, and we see this quite a lot where goalkeepers go, they can't necessarily hold it, but almost like basketball, that's probably what I'd say, is where then you go one hand, just flick it away from the striker, you've got control of it, and then you go and either pick up the following ball, or in this case he wasn't able to pick it up, so he's going to clear it down the line. I thought he did the first part brilliantly, because not a lot of goalkeepers will come for that given where the cross came in. He then just lost a little bit of composure when he was going for the clearance, or a little bit of awareness as to what was around him, hence looking to then fire the ball down the line, not knowing the player was near him, giving away the foul. The actual free kick, and I watched this a few times, and it's a real tricky one, because again, I think his positioning is okay. I think the wall is in a good position. I do just think it's an excellent free kick. I think that one where it's whipped in at your near post, your angle of dive is always going to be backwards. And then ideally you get your two hands to it and palm it back from where it came, or palm it back out into play. And essentially he's a few centimeters off, you know, it has gone over the line, of course, but he is just a few centimeters off. So, you know, in terms of what he could do better here next time, or what he might change, we are talking the smallest of details. Maybe it is a slight positional change. I don't think there's much you do with the wall. I think when it's a quality of free kick like this, I think there's very little else you can do. And sometimes you will get beaten on your near post like that if it is whipped in at that pace.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It is the EFL overview, starting in the Championship, where Devis Vazquez, a first proper mention for him on Between the Sticks, and deservedly so, with a couple of top stops in a hard-fought draw for Sheffield Wednesday at Leeds. Ian Melier also with a point saver in that one. Still at the club, deadline has passed. What now for Carl Darlow, you might ask? Penalty saves apiece for Matija Sarkic of Millwall against Birmingham and Dan Backman of Watford against Coventry. Both games ending in draws, with Backman on the receiving end of a calamitous, yet slightly humorous, own goal scored by Wesley Hurt. We've had a tweet in from Craig Burns, who's asked, GK Union, questionable commentary for Sunderland's third goal there on Sky Sports. Looking forward to Between the Sticks for your take on it. Well, you've got it, Craig. Gavin Batsunu vilified by Don Goodman for his part in Southampton's 5-0 mauling at the hands of Sunderland. So a couple of solid one-on-one saves in this one, but called out for not keeping out Pierre Ekwa's long ranger. Both Robert Earnshaw and Kevin Phillips, to be fair, fared far better with their analysis during the break. Asmir Begovic with a one-on-one masterclass as QPR left Middlesbrough with two goals and a win from three shots on target. Borough, however, unable to find the net, with Begovic busy with nine saves in total. Lee Nichols with a hugely important 94th minute save at the Hawthorns, and it was hugely important because moments later Huddersfield bagged a winner to steal 3 points from West Brom and in turn their first win of the season. And finally, Alex Rullison in for Cardiff, and worth flagging for two reasons. One, a potential save of the season contender in the midweek EFL Cup clash with Birmingham. And two, selected ahead of Jack Enick for the defeat to Ipswich, despite a very good start to the season by the latter.
Yeah, lots to get into here. Let's start on a real positive, Asmo Begovic. It was really entertaining watching these saves. And the only thing I could think was kind of reminded me of watching like an adult playing with children. And I know that's really disrespectful to the outfield lads that are playing in this. But each of those one-on-ones, it was just, he made it look so easy. The timing of each of the one-on-ones where he's come out, spread, and you just never felt like he was going to get beat. And I think it was a really nice lesson, this, for any young goalkeepers listening in. Just watch these saves. And again, watch the way in which each of them, they're all very different, but there's also similarities in each. And at the point of impact, he's essentially the same distance every single time. He gets to the same spot, similar technique, and just snuffs out the danger every time. And again, he's obviously a big guy, big frame, but just uses it really, really well. It was a great top hand save in this as well. So it wasn't just the one-on-ones. The top hand save from distance, I thought, was excellent. When you watch it from behind the goal, that's going right in the top corner. But yeah, top performance and a massive win for them. And yeah, more than happy to talk about that Zunu, because I did think this was harsh in terms of the analysis. And the reason I say that is that at the point when the player cuts in to then whip it, ordinarily, percentages would suggest that he's going to go far post. Now, I'm not suggesting for one second that a goalkeeper should guess, but we talk a lot about anticipating. And had the defence done their job here, normally that's where the player would have gone. The near post, I say near post, it's not effectively near post, but you know what I mean, would have been covered. And so normally players would then fire it towards the far, and the goalkeeper, in this case Bazuna, would have been making a save to his right. So I do wonder whether just having that kind of goalkeeping knowledge, you're just edging ever so slightly. But even so, the actual strike is a brilliant strike. He's absolutely fired it. Yeah, it's 20 odd yards out, but it's going right into the corner. Now, could Batsunu save it? Yes. I mean, his hand has gone over the ball, but again, the fact that it struck so well from so far out, Batsunu moves really well to his left, springs down low. Another day, potentially gets a full hand to it and he manages to get it around the post. But I think this is one of those where, for me, it sits in between, you know, is it an error or is it a great save? If he makes a save, we're talking about a fantastic save. And we're talking about it on this podcast. If he gets a hand to it, goes around the post, that's a moment we highlight. Now, the fact that he hasn't done that and it's just crept through, it's then being seen as an error on the commentary. And this is sort of, for me, one of those classic moments where there's no in between. It's either an error or a great save. And, you know, I feel a bit sorry for him on this, and that I do think it was just an excellent finish. And yes, on another day, he might be able to keep it out, but I wouldn't put it down as an error personally. And lastly, yeah, I'll touch on the Renison one, because I did find that really strange. Just the fact that, look, just for transparency, Jack Anik's one that I work with, but he has been phenomenal. First five games of the season, I think you can ask any Cardiff fan that. And I mentioned this for a couple of reasons. I almost feel like it's a little bit unfair on Runnison, and he ended up having a tough day at Ipswich. And I just think that when goalkeepers change position, and again, we've spoken about this a lot in terms of goalkeeping dynamics, in terms of who they're bringing in at various clubs, and, oh, surely you want to have the best two goalkeepers you can possibly get. No, not always. There is a psychological impact on all of this. And this is a good example where you're now stepping in for a league game for a goalkeeper that's not put a foot wrong, made brilliant saves in all the games, arguably helped them win the previous league game that they played. The amount of pressure that's on your shoulders, and he's a young goalkeeper still, top goalkeeper Runnison from what I know, but, you know, young goalkeeper having to step into something like that, you're stepping in on the back foot a bit. And I just find it odd when managers make decisions like this when the timing just seems so off. Like, I get it if you want to put a goalkeeper in at some point. For me, I think you always need to find a reason of sorts. Now, it might be the most minor of reasons. It might be a team lose. It might be that the goalkeeper makes a bit of an error or something like that. But I do find that when that happens, what tends to happen, the other goalkeeper stepping in is stepping in a different capacity. They're stepping in on the front foot that little bit more, and it will be welcomed that little bit more. So that's what I found strange about this situation. I did feel a bit sorry for him having to step in a situation like this. And now the manager's got a decision as to what he does moving forward, which I think, had he have waited for a different time to do the transition, it might not necessarily have given him a decision like that.
Into League One, where I'm quickly going to call out Alfie May for some unnecessary glare on Fleetwood's Stephen McMullen. So I was at this game. Mayer bagged the winning penalty as Charlton beat Fleetwood and proceeded to let McMullen know in no uncertain terms about the fact that he'd scored. So he's only 18, McMullen. It was just his second pro start. So Alfie, you know, lay off the lad. Liam Roberts with what I'm going to call very Liam Roberts-esque saves as the Barnsley man continued the trend of keeping out Cheltenham's attack. The Robins remain without a goal in all competitions so far this season. That is a staggering statistic. And Joe Wildsmith receiving red following another double slash triple save in what ended up being a defeat for Derby at Bolton. Now, I can't recall seeing anything like this, where the referee has allowed Wildsmith to make the saves. Presumably, he's waiting for a goal to potentially be scored following what he deemed to be the initial indiscretion. The goal wasn't scored, so he's pulled it back and gave Wildsmith his marching orders. I don't think I've seen that before.
Yeah, it was a bit unusual, this one, because you do wonder, had they have then fired the ball into the net, I guess in a way it probably would have been a better outcome for all, in a way, in that he wouldn't then have got the red card. But yeah, it was a bit of a strange situation. I felt for him a bit here, in that he was caught out in that position. It wasn't any fault of his own, and he actually did the best he could to try and keep the ball out of the net, which he did effectively. But of course, yeah, hit his hand, and that being the case, he got the red. But yeah, really unusual situation. And yeah, just to give a little bit of love to Liam Roberts, as you mentioned, he's got a real style about him, Liam Roberts. Like, you can tell a Liam Roberts save a long way off, and he loves that top corner one. He's made a few of them this season already, and this is a big witness for Barnsley. Crazy that Cheltenham still haven't scored a goal. And again, it's so tough for defenders, goalkeepers, when you're in a team that are struggling in the way that they are. But certainly on another day, they could have had a couple here.
And into League Two, where there was another penalty stop to report. Barrow's Paul Farman reading it well to deny Jack Muldoon of Harrogate in a 1-0 triumph for the Bluebirds. Harry Lewis, he kept it clean for Bradford in a stalemate with Mansfield. A fine finish to a week where he was both MOM and the shootout hero in the EFL Cup win over Wrexham. And quickly sticking on the EFL Cup, a lovely story to come out of Tranmere, where Joe Murphy turned out against Leicester in the second round, 23 years after he'd faced them in the final of that very competition. And Walsall's Owen Evans twice flying to his right to deny Connor Hall of Colchester as the Saddlers ran out 1-0 victors.
Yeah, lots of good stuff here again. And just to make mention of Owen Evans, I don't feel like we spoke about him all that much on this podcast in recent times, but very, very solid for Walsall. I know that he's really highly rated there, and certainly probably one of the reasons we don't talk about him all that often is you don't see many Owen Evans errors. To be honest, that's quite difficult to say, by the way. But you don't see all that many, and certainly it does sound like he's gone from strength to strength from last season and started this season very well.
The young Richard Lee, of course. If you remember our interview with Nick Colgan way back when, he said that during his time at Wigan, Owen Evans reminded him of a young Richard Lee.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a compliment or not.
Well, you thought his future would have been doomed as a result of that.
It won't be long before the many injuries hit him. But no, I'm hoping that was a compliment. I'm sure it was.
Just to quickly mention the EFL Cup too, there was lots of action, wasn't there? I've talked about Harry Lewis. Alex Cairns is worth a mention, coming up against his old club Leeds for Salford. Incredible performance from him, winning the penalty shootout as well. Although, we should say, the GK Union not at play here. He was very quick, wasn't he, to call out Carl Darlow for being off his line. So, you know, he noticed it. Fair play. You've got to flag it. And Darlow was miles off his line. And special mentions too, Kieran Slicker doing well for Ipswich. Ellery Balcom doing well in a very rare outing for Brentford. Lucas Jensen as well doing his job for Lincoln. And the game between Port Vale and Crewe Alexandra. So it was goalless in the tie. Went straight to penalties. I don't think I've seen this before. Port Vale winning 2-0 on penalties. Two scored, one saved, four missed. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a 2-0 scoreline. I'm trying to think the lowest scoreline I've seen on penalties. That's probably the lowest scoreline. In fact, you could get low. You could get 1-0. But 2-0, if you think about this logically, is the second lowest scoreline you can possibly get in a penalty shootout. Right in saying that, aren't I?
I mean, are we going back to your head is round again here? It doesn't take a rocket scientist, Richard. No, if 1-0 is the lowest, yes, 2-0 could be the second lowest.
You know what I mean? I'm just thinking this through. That is like, so that might even be in the hit. I'm sure there is a 1-0 scoreline out there and someone can find it for us and let us know. But then 2-0, this might even be a record potentially. Again, I'm just making this up as I'm speaking. I'm sort of talking. I wish I hadn't probably started the conversation. But yeah, this has got to be like, surely I'm surprised it's not like, you know, normally if you hear it's a 2-0 scoreline, it's, oh, that's the lowest penalty shootout scoreline we've had in 30 years or something like that. But I haven't seen anything that's said that. So there must have been 1-0 at some point. Anyway, let's talk about the actual saves that you mentioned, because there were some top ones. As you say, some great performances. You mentioned Alex Cairns there, and I did watch the majority of this game. The save he made in the second half down to his right, I thought was outstanding. Back post, where he's had to move to his right, so sharp to get down and keep the ball out. And as you mentioned, against his old club, to get the victory in the way that they did. They weren't able to follow up at the weekend. Obviously, they had a defeat, which was frustrating for them. You kind of felt like maybe that would have been a turning point of sorts. Not that they've started terribly, but you kind of feel like they're the sort of team that could really kick on, but haven't yet. But this game in particular, you know, showed the best of Salford and certainly the best of Alex Cairns.
Clean Sheet Club.
Well, this is one of the great things about doing this via Zoom and not having a spare phone that someone can send me a load of information to for me to read off. I therefore have the opportunity to pass Clean Sheet Club back to the originator himself. So actually, the good thing about this is that you're going to know exactly what you've written. It's not going to come as a surprise when all these ridiculous things are put in front of you. So I'm expecting this to be top drawer. But yes, it is time for this.
Okay, we'll start in the Premier League. Matt Turner, clean sheet number one. Alisson, clean sheet number two. Anthony Patterson, clean sheet number three. No, of course, we'll do this properly. Starting in the Premier League, Matt Turner, English football account opened. Alisson, account opened this term. Into the Championship, Anthony Patterson, tally doubled. Ian Melier, remaining very much in. Davies Vazquez, English football account opened, mark two. Matt Ingram, account opened this term, mark two. Asmir Begovic, lift off at Loftus. Connor Hazard, safety. Freddie Woodman, four wins on the spin. Interleague One, Viljami Sinisalo, early contender. Jokel Andresen, account opened this term, mark three. Liam Roberts, back-to-back. Tayashby Hammond, 75% success rate. And Max Striek, all the games. Interleague Two, Mark Howard, Foz passed. Ian Lawler, account opened this term, mark four. Murphy Mahoney, picking up. Jake Eastwood, heading north. Paul Farman, account opened this term, mark five. Christy Pym, get the jugs in. Harry Lewis, two in a week. Stuart Moore, cum. Luke Daniels, it's easy being green. And Owen Evans, account open this term, mark six.
There you go. That's how it's meant to sound.
We'll also chuck in a final dose of these.
GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way. GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way.
Yes, the window has closed. The deadline has passed. There have been some final movers and shakers. Here they are. Dean Henderson has gone from Manchester United to Crystal Palace for £20 million. Altay Bayindir from Fenerbahce into Manchester United for £4.5 million. Georgi Petrovic from New England Revolution to Chelsea. That's £12.5 million plus £1.5 million. In add-on, Stephen Bender, Swansea to Fulham, undisclosed. Ryan Alsop, Cardiff to Hull, also undisclosed. Odysseas Vlachodimos from Benfica to Nottingham Forest, also undisclosed on a four-year deal. Decent goalkeeping department they now have at the City Ground. Arthur Okonkwo, out of Arsenal and into Wrexham on a season-long loan. Wrexham, remember, this season have also brought in Luke McNicholas from Sligo and Liam Hall from Bradford Park Avenue. Ben Foster, obviously now retired. Dean Boutsanis back to Sutton from Reading. That's a loan until January. Maduka Okoye from Watford to Udinese, undisclosed. Nathan Broom into Swansea from AFC Wimbledon on a free. Thomas Vashlik, unattached, into New England Revolution. Mason Terry to Concord Rangers from West Ham on a season-long loan. Max Metcalf into Fylde from Middlesbrough, also on a season-long loan. Louis Malden from Wolves to Rochdale on a season-long loan. Sam Sargent out of Leyton Orient and into Waterford. Pete Jameson to Hartlepool from Harrogate. Jack Bycroft, Southampton to Aldershot on a one-month loan. And Nathan Harvey, unattached, to Gillingham and then subsequently sent on loan to Lewis.
Well, there you go. Lots and lots of goalkeeper movement. It's a big goalkeeper movement as well, it has to be said, in the last couple of weeks, as we touched on before, we had a feeling might happen. Obviously, a couple of those that are definitely worth mentioning. Certainly Petrovic into Chelsea. I know that those at New England rate him really, really highly. He's one that I've seen bits of, and I know that there were a lot of clubs that were very, very keen on him. So keen to see how he kicks on at Chelsea. Obviously interested in the lads that both Forest and United have done, because again, they won't be goalkeepers that in England we know all that much about at the moment, but I know they both come with good profiles. Probably the one that, and we did mention it, I think last week, that I'm really fascinated to see how it plays out is Crystal Palace, just because, again, it goes back to that Rhea Ramsdale scenario. Can't help but feel they're going to have a similar thing at Palace now with Henderson Johnson. So yeah, I'd be really, really fascinated to see how that plays out. And as you mentioned, quite a bit lower down, which it is very different, the goalkeeper market to the outfield market, that you tend to get the glut of things, and certainly we did this year, either before the start of pre-season or before the start of the season, whereas the last few days when you get towards deadline day, there's not many goalkeepers that go, and that's largely because the majority of the goalkeeping departments are sorted by that point. But we did have quite a few slots at the back end, obviously Forest, United, Crystal Palace, etc. at the top end. And then, as you mentioned, one or two in the Championship. I think a good one for Brian Allsop to go into Hull, given that Cardiff decided to sign Runnison, which meant that he was surplus to requirements, but should give him an opportunity to continue to compete at that level. Obviously, a tough competition initially with Matt Ingram to try and win his place. And lastly, just to mention Louis Moulden, good loan for him. Obviously, did really well at Solihull last year. He then returned to be number three back into the season at Wolves, but good opportunity to be top end National League, get a full season of games under his belt, and certainly started the season really, really well.
Two names we should just quickly touch on as well, because when you look at the window this summer, again, it feels like it's slightly unique in that there are players, massive players, who are either without clubs or at their current clubs, but not in with a chance of playing at all. And two particular names are David De Gea and Hugo Lloris. What is going to happen with that pair now?
Yeah, really interesting. The David De Gea one surprises me. I thought, I don't know, you just put two and two together and you kind of assume that he might, well, you certainly would have thought there'd have been a lot of interest this summer and you would have thought it had been sorted by now. So you do wonder whether he is just taking his time and waiting for that perfect slot to come up, which when he's had so long at United, I mean, it's very rarely that you see it with footballers almost taking a bit of time off and then coming back in. But I do wonder whether there is part of him that isn't in a huge rush and just wants to wait for that right slot and is, you know, enjoying having a bit of time to himself and no doubt keeping himself fit, but just waiting for that perfect thing rather than just jumping at another opportunity that maybe doesn't quite excite him in the same way that maybe United did. So I'm sure it won't be too long until he's sorted, but at the same time, I can kind of understand that one. And then similarly with Hugo Lloris, I think that, again, he's only going to move if it ticks all the boxes. And I believe there was a bit of interest, you know, last few days from a couple of other Premier League clubs, if stories are to be believed. But again, you know, having had the career that he's had, and no doubt he's very content in terms of what he's done to this point, it's not one of them where he's just going to jump at any opportunity just to get away from Tottenham. I'm sure that his day-to-day is okay. And, you know, he'll still sort of back himself to put a bit of a challenge on and see where it goes. But similarly, I think goalkeepers of this level, this caliber, and when they are no doubt financially free as well, it has to be the right fit for so many different reasons for someone to want to make that move. So on one hand, yeah, it is very surprising. On another hand, I've got no doubt it isn't because of lack of interest. They'll both have plenty of interest. It will just be a case of wanting to make sure it's the right move for them before they do anything.
Before we go, just a few bits of admin. Firstly, thoughts go out to the family of Jan Youngblood, who has died at the age of 82. Big goalkeeper for the Netherlands and two successive World Cup final defeats as part of that Total Football Dutch team. He was a ball-playing goalkeeper as well, well ahead of his time. And we spoke to Frans Herck, if you remember, about him in the podcast we did a few years back. He also, at the time, set a record of 683 minutes in international matches without conceding a goal. So RIP, Jan, you are very much part of the Goalkeepers Union. And to finish, two other goalkeepers who scored during the week. Richard, Texas A&M Aggies goalkeeper Kenna Caldwell scored from a free kick a good 40 yards out in a victory over Tulsa. But it's the goal scored by Jake Buss of New Haven that we want to talk about. This was against Little Common in the Southern Combination Premier Division. And it wasn't a header. It wasn't a tap-in. It wasn't a bundle over the line like we have seen on many occasions in the past. This was a last-minute equaliser that was about 25 yards out. What a strike. What a goal. What a moment.
Brilliant goal. It showed a lot of tenacity, actually. Because you say the ball's broke. It wasn't from the initial ball in. Ball's broke. He does so well to get onto it. Great touch. Absolutely whipped it top corner from 25 yards. It's a really unusual goalkeeping goal to see. Great finish, though.
Absolutely wonderful stuff. Okay, Richard, I'll let you get back to your business. It's been nothing but a pleasure. Look forward to seeing the Fozcast, by the way. When is it being filmed?
Obviously, slightly wary at this point that you might turn up. So I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll just say that it's being filmed soon. I can't tell you the location for obvious reasons. You know, they're very, very fussy about that and certain confidentiality rules and whatever else. I'm sure you understand. But just rest assured that it will be out next week. And I'll tell you what, I will make a point of giving you a mention of in some capacity. I don't know, but I will give you a mention. How does that sound?
Thank you, Richard. Very much appreciated. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast between the sticks. Keepers.
Away!
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.